Welcome to Super Together. I'm James Cochran.
And I'm Ginger Rothis.
And this is a brand new day. We haven't recorded anything else today. We're just coming in as we usually do for our weekly. No, this is that was all a lie. This is Act Two of our Hamilton review. I'm just going to call it review because it's easier to say that. But yeah, we are taking a kind of a dive into the relationships and the relational truths that we see present in the Lin-Manuel Miranda musical Hamilton, which just came out on Disney Plus for us to watch and enjoy. Listen to Act One because we get into some of the synopsis details and some things that are really specific to Act One, and we'll be building on a lot of the Act One stuff I think here in this Act Two episode. And what happens, Ginger, when I say Act Two?
A Gesundheit.
Yeah.
Or excuse you.
Gesundheit. Gesundheit is what you say when we say Act Two.
Do you want me to do the 30-second?
Yeah, I'd like for Ginger to do, just so that everybody can get a sense of what we're talking about, she's going to do a 30-second recap. So the curtain rises on Act Two after the...
Yeah, remind me where we start.
We start with, a character arrives and asks those gathered what he missed.
Jefferson comes back on the scene.
That's okay. Right. So ready, set, go.
Okay, so Jefferson has been in France. He's coming back into U.S. Political roles. We see Hamilton writing like he's running out of time, creating the Federalist Papers. We see Hamilton prioritize work over family, and there's fallout from that. There's some infidelity. There's grief. There's trauma. There's pride. There are two duels that go wrong, so to speak. Then Eliza becomes the hero of the story, continues Hamilton's work, and we have a lot of things in our country that we can thank both of them for.
All right. That was 45 seconds, and you only left out a handful of really critically important things. Just because I have the Wikipedia plot synopsis up here.
Okay.
Jefferson comes back, was really critical in the early stages of the revolution, kind of sat out for a minute, then comes back in 1789, is the Secretary of State for Washington and Hamilton, the Secretary of the Treasury. And Eliza and her family go upstate for the summer. Hamilton doesn't want to. He wants to stay and focus on his work. Begins an affair with Maria Reynolds, and then her husband says that he's going to blackmail him. Mm-hmm. Hamilton, Jefferson create the Compromise of 1790, where they articulate the plan where, okay, they're going to lend, Madison and Jefferson are going to lend support to Hamilton's sort of financial plan, and the country's capital is going to be on the Potomac River, which will become Washington, D.C. That is a moment where we see Burr, maybe for the first time, name some really specific frustrations that he has with sort of his position relative to Hamilton's. He talks about the room where it happens and how he's not able to be in the room where it happens. Mm-hmm. And how that is disappointing to him and, obviously not something that he likes.
That is a pivotal moment. That's important.
Yeah. So we see this animosity between Jefferson, Madison, and Hamilton. Jefferson, Madison, Burr, and all that type of stuff. More stuff happens. They're trying to get rid of Hamilton, and in doing so, they come to him and say, "Hey, some of these numbers don't add up. Maybe there's some financial impropriety here." And he's like, "Actually, there's no financial impropriety. I was just paying off my mistress's husband." And then, sort of as like a preemptive strike, files the Reynolds pamphlet, which basically destroys his entire life. Obviously, horribly upsets his wife. I think they say in the musical, like, he'll never be president now. Like, that, like, takes him out of the running for president, the fact that he openly admits to all this. And there's a point where His son, you mentioned the duels that go horribly wrong. His son, Philip, sort of in trying to defend his father's honor is killed, you know, which throws us into this, you know, moment of grief that Eliza experiences in Hamilton as well. You know, Hamilton kind of fades out of the spotlight, is called back into the spotlight to endorse either Burr or Hamilton or Jefferson. Burr or Jefferson for president. Mm-hmm. He endorses Jefferson. Mm-hmm. Burr, feeling so frustrated and annoyed at the ways that Hamilton has interrupted his ability to succeed, challenges him to a duel. They duel. Hamilton dies about a day after he's shot in Weehawken, New Jersey, I believe. Right? Somewhere in that?
No, oh. I didn't know that detail.
So that's the 2-minute recap. So I think that there are some really different themes, or I don't even know if we would say that they're different themes as much as they're the Act One introduces us to these ideas of, you know, where you place your mental, emotional, relational energy. And then Act Two demonstrates, I think, a lot of the consequences of that, in particular for Hamilton and Burr. So when you observe Act Two, what are the types of things that you observed that you said, oh, these are the relational lessons that we really can draw from this?
I think the theme of, the question mark actually of forgiveness, you know, that is something I wanted to talk to you about too, of, you know, you and I both meet with people that have infidelity as part of their lives. And so watching how other people deal with it can sometimes bring up in us, well, she should have left, she should have stayed, you know. And we've seen this in play out in pop culture as well. So that was one thing, the forgiveness and infidelity piece, the deep loss and grief, and how the loss of Philip, we watch it actually bring Alexander and Eliza together in a new sense of depth. You know, and how that shapes us, how grief shapes us, and tragic loss of a child, how that affected Eliza. And then she goes on to start orphanages. And, you know, and I always think, would that have happened if that hadn't happened? But then you can't say, those are the things that I really see in Act Two playing out, of these human dilemmas of what do we do with the experiences we have in life? And some of us crumble and some of us can rise out of that. Mm-hmm. And I think Hamilton, the musical, really illuminates that story of coming out of the impossible, right? Yeah, that's the song, or the unimaginable.
Yeah. You know, I think, so when I think about the infidelity that happens, it's one of those things. It's like watching a car accident, like in slow motion, you can't take your eyes off it, you know, that, and seeing it happen, I'm just, in having had some familiarity with the story of Hamilton, I'm like thinking like this, like, you just want to say, stop. Don't
exactly.
Just, you know,
don't,
how can you
it.
Say no to this by saying just no, and just closing the door, go away, leave me alone.
Well, they show that so beautifully on stage, because you see, is
Maria Reynolds?
Yeah, Maria Reynolds. You see her standing in the shadows in this red dress, and you can just feel what's coming, you know. And I think those 2 seconds of temptation are universal feelings that we all have. And so you want to say to Hamilton,
not
stop.
Me. I don't have those feelings of temptation. Everybody else, I think, does.
All of us humans deal with that.
Yeah. So no, it's, I think it's. So watching that and then thinking about going back to this question that we talked about on Act One of like agency and the responsibility that we take for the decisions that we make. You know, he's saying the question like, how can I say no to this? Like, those are the words in the song.
Lord, and it's, help me say no to this.
Yeah. Like, as
he's
if
praying
again, as if he doesn't have the actual capacity.
That's right.
You know, and to me, and not to get, you know, I don't know whether this is political or religious or whatever, but one of the things that I really detest about the way some churches approach things like, abstinence education or human sexuality or those types of things is related to, like, women need to be modest because men can't control themselves, is to me one of the most frustrating and illegitimate narratives that exists in conversations about human sexuality.
And this is why I love you. Thank well, you. Speak it from the treetops, please.
To me, it is... And that's what ultimately I think Hamilton is doing in this space, is he's saying, like, oh, I can't, like, there's this beautiful woman. How am I going to be able to say no? And, like, you know, again, the way she was dressed and all that type of stuff, which I think to me is a, that is a pervasive narrative that still exists today, where, you know, we ask victims of sexual assault, what were they wearing and those types of things. And to what degree, does this other person bear responsibility? And again, it sounds like this was a consensual affair. So, I mean, certainly, you know, Maria Reynolds has responsibility for the relationship, but in as much as this affects Hamilton's life, he has the capacity to say, and again, if we think about, you know, the late 1700s, he would have all the agency in the world, all the control,
all the power,
all the power in that space to be able to say, you know, actually, no, I'm not going to, you know, engage in this relationship. So I think given that, I think that that is to me one of the things that I find most difficult in relationships is, at what point is Hamilton, I'm thinking about the conversations that we don't see, but is at what point does Hamilton actually accept responsibility? I see couples so often where when one partner wrongs the other partner, so much of their initial energy is around defensiveness. It's around, well, you don't know Eliza, Maria. I mean, she was looking good. How could I have said no? I was praying to God for help and God didn't help me. So what else could I have done? You know, like,
you've been cold. And you just nag
you,
at me.
You were out of town. I was having a hard time. And again, that makes forgiveness almost impossible.
Exactly.
That makes reconciliation almost impossible.
That's right.
And the reality is this did not come out until it had to come out, I think is one of the things that's most frustrating probably for Eliza. And that I think speaks to this other dimension of looking at Hamilton's, kind of this animating energy of, like, seize every opportunity, squash every potential threat.
Exactly.
The threat here is like, oh, well, this could threaten my my career. So to hell with my personal life. I'm going to just destroy that. I'm going to, you know, burn is the song, because I'm just going to set that on fire so that nobody thinks I did anything illegal or, you know, was was improper or anything like that.
That's how I interpreted that scene, too, of, like, very seemingly selfish motives to protect himself. He took down Eliza in a sense, emotionally.
And at a minimum, like, didn't create, I don't know if it was, and I don't know how this is portrayed in the musical versus how it was in real life, but, like, the impression that I got from the musical was that, like, she found out about the affair at the same time everybody else did, you know, with the pamphlet. You know, again, there's a notion that we talk about in therapy a lot called the trauma of discovery. And in particular with infidelity, but it's the, it's that moment when one partner realizes that their other partner has betrayed them. And how it sounds like she didn't even have the luxury of doing that with, Alexander being present with, in any kind of privacy or explanation or any of that. So I think that if I was going to look at the conditions, I was going to say, okay, if you ask the question, how can you make it as difficult as possible for forgiveness to happen? I'd say, well, let's go to Hamilton Act Two. And I'd say, let's do all of those things. You know, let's have an affair where someone refuses to take any personal responsibility. And then let's reveal that affair in a public way that, doesn't allow any sort of, you know, engaged conversation about what transpired and how they can sort of reconcile. Basically, it sounds like when it comes to his marital relationship, Hamilton did everything wrong here. And again, and you mentioned this idea that it takes this monumental grief to bring things back together, but we never see, the closest we get is a moment, I don't know if it's toward the, in The Unimaginable or in another song, where they turn toward each other.
She takes his hand.
It is not that same level of connection.
That's
that is kind of
It's her showing mercy to him is how it feels, I think, watching that scene. And on Facebook, I asked some of my friends to comment, and that was mentioned a few times of her, you know, we use the word forgiveness and mercy and grace, mm-hmm. but I think it's encapsulating that moment where, you know, she extends a hand to him and he kind of crumbles, his face mm-hmm. crumbles a little bit, like receiving that mercy.
Yeah. It is, you know, it kind of reminds me, and there's a lot of films or movies that kind of portray this idea of, you know, showing, you know, giving an enemy prisoner, you know, a drink of water mm-hmm. or a loaf of bread
right.
or something like that.
Right.
It's, you know, there's mercy there, but there is not that same level of kind of love and affection and infatuation
That's
like that.
Right.
And whether that can be restored and rebuilt, that is hard under the most ideal circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see Hamilton ever try to cultivate those circumstances, because I think his focus is elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, one of the things that I say to people about affairs, or I think a lot of people say this isn't my original idea, but affairs happen when a relationship is vulnerable and an opportunity presents itself.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like the vulnerability of the relationship was born out of a lack of investment on Hamilton's part. And it sounds like, you know, Eliza made every attempt to engage him, say, hey, you know, I think you need to focus on this. And he's saying, no, I really need to focus on this other thing. So that led to the disconnection and the vulnerability in the marriage. And then the opportunity was, it was just a matter of time, you know, for someone to be present in a way that allowed Hamilton to feel like, oh, like I have an attraction to this person. I don't feel connected to my wife, you know, and, you know, is able to sort of justify it within this, you know, internal narrative. Oh, I just, you know, I can't stop myself kind
right.
of thing.
And that's a theme in his life, right? Of taking the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked in our Act One podcast of that drive he had to not miss anything and urgency and take the opportunity. And
mm-hmm.
here we see where that crosses a line to damaging.
Yeah. One of the things that I was intrigued by is the shift from like rivalry toward like enemy status with Burr and Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, like, mm-hmm. like when relationships turn sour in that way, like how do you see that? How do you help people navigate that? Because ultimately it doesn't seem like it eats at Hamilton all that much, but it just consumes Burr, at least as it's portrayed in the musical. So how do you see that, like when people become just sort of consumed by rivalry turned animosity, or just the animosity in general? How do you see that?
Yeah, I think that kind of, I mean, the word that comes to mind is pride, and then that mm-hmm. fuels anger, right? And that's kind of what we see with Burr. And it's interesting, I think Burr's focus narrowed into beating Hamilton
mm-hmm.
instead of, or being better than Hamilton.
Yeah.
I felt like when he was running for president, there's that scene where he's passing out flyers
yep.
and the one of the you know, people that takes a flyer says, he's a great guy. I feel like I could have a beer with him. And he like does this like,
mm-hmm.
yay moment, right? Like, I've got him. And I thought then, I'm not sure what we can learn from that scene, but I thought, does Burr really want this for the betterment of the country, or is this his, I want to win and
mm-hmm.
I want to be the guy? And I think that part of the anger we see in Burr is his inability to get outside of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that has to be work that the person wants to do themselves, right?
Yeah.
We can observe it and we can see that it was his demise and you know, eventually kind of ruined him with killing Hamilton. But he had to want to not live that way. He had to want to not be angry.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we ever see that. In fact, we see fueling of the fire when Hamilton picks Jefferson, and then, you know, Burr goes right into rage. So how to help somebody through that, I guess, is I don't get the people coming to me that are angry. I get the people coming to me that are living with somebody that's mm-hmm. like a burr, you know? Yeah. So it's interesting because I think that we can't help somebody that doesn't want to help themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a blind spot for Burr of, you know, his ego throughout was a little bit of a blind spot. And then he, instead of seeing the good that Hamilton was doing or that they could do together, it really got this sense of there's only room for one of us.
Yeah.
And I think he says that in the end, something like, I realized there was room for both Hamilton and I. Mm-hmm. I think that's in one of the final scenes. And that to me speaks to that addressing the scarcity mentality that we get yeah. into of only one of us can be successful. Only right. one of us can, you know, have the money. Only one of us can have the fame. And I think we all struggle with that. And all that does for us is make us angry, mm-hmm. right? That scarcity mentality will just make you angry inside. It does not accomplish what you hope it will accomplish. It ruins you. So I think that if we looked at who is the more... or the pride-less person, I would say that it's Hamilton in that relationship. Of Burr's pride was his demise, and I don't think he wanted to help himself out of that until he realized in the end mm-hmm. that there was room for both of them.
Yeah. It is, I think that's a beautiful interpretation because I think it points to the energy that we have in ourselves that is... we've talked about this before, but really unwilling to take personal responsibility.
Yeah.
And there are times when, you know, we shouldn't be taking personal responsibility. One of the internal narratives that a lot of my clients work through is that they think everything that happens to them is their fault. Like they've, totally. Like they bear that yes. responsibility. So exactly. they certainly think that there's a healthy balance there.
Yes.
But I think for Burr, you know, he talks a lot about being kept out of the room where it happens. And he says specifically that Hamilton has kept him from the room where
yes.
it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And Samara Crawford Herrera, who mm-hmm. we've had on the show before, her sort of like quote of the year that she's working through that I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember it specifically is, what I want is a seat at the table. And if there's not a seat at the mm-hmm. table, I'm going to bring a folding chair.
I love that.
And that speaks to scarcity versus abundance, right?
Exactly.
Scarcity says, there's only so many seats.
That's
and
right.
if I don't get one, then I'm on the outs. And instead it's like, no, I'm going to
bring
a chair, which is, again, that's part of the difference between Hamilton and Burr's ideology. Mm-hmm. But I think part of what that speaks to is when we find ourselves, on the outside looking in, it is so easy for us as humans to find a scapegoat,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is this, that Old Testament tradition of like, you literally found a goat and then you heaped the sins of your entire community onto this goat.
That's right.
And then the goat would run away into the wilderness
That's
and take all your sins,
from.
Take all your
That's
sins
right.
with it. And I think that the same thing is kind of what we do is we say like, it doesn't matter what I like, I'm not going to take responsibility for the fact that I'm kept out of the room where it happens. It's this Hamilton guy.
Right.
And it's easy because he sees himself at odds with Hamilton in so many ways. Their personal philosophy, their political philosophies are very different. And so because they're always on the opposite ends, that's where he heaps the blame. And I think what you rightly name is that keeps him from doing any real self-work.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because he cannot see his problems as anything other than Hamilton caused,
right.
As opposed to a lack of maturity in himself or too much pride or not enough, you know, sort of ego denial or whatever it looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah, in that scene where he's left out of the room and he's mm-hmm. kind of front stage and the three of them are in the room. You know, part of me was like, go find something else to do. Like, go,
sure.
you have this talent, Burr. You have the connections. You have the network. The U.S. has a lot of work to be done. If you're mm-hmm. out of that room, go find another room.
Yeah.
You know, but we could watch that, right? It's not our movie. We're watching him. But that was a pivotal moment of, I'm either going to spend my life in blame and hatred and anger,
mm-hmm.
or if I'm left out of this room, I'll go find a room where I can make a contribution.
Right.
And, you know, and so I think that's where the maturity comes into, is it about the work or is that about me being right?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's, and we've mentioned maturity a couple times and especially a lot in Act One. And I think part of what we see is when we see a lot of these characters making problematic decisions, or not confronting their own, you know, issues in ways that would be helpful, so much of it seems to be things that differentiate mature people from immature people. You know, the inability to see the, you know, what responsibility you have for, you know, the direction your life is going or the decisions that are sort of being made around you. The inability to see your own agency in making a bad decision, you know, that's unfolding in front of you. You know, those are things that you get, you develop that maturity, later in life, again, by confronting these, you know, these challenges that start to blow up. And again, I don't know that we ever get to see either of those characters, you know, culminate in that way where they get to a place where they've, you know, gotten to that level of maturity. I think that you and I both talked about, well, you've mentioned it specifically, is the idea that, you know, Eliza really carries on this torch. One of my favorite sort of memes of, you know, sort of post-Hamilton going live is this someone asked, hey, have you seen Hamilton? And said, oh, do you mean the musical about Eliza Hamilton, the founder of the first private orphanage in New York?
Awesome.
Yes,
I
have.
That.
Yes, I have seen Hamilton.
That's so cool.
And well, and honestly, it's like, you know, I think that we observe really like with two mature characters in Eliza and George Washington,
yes.
to me, are the ones that have the most like ego denial,
yes.
the ones with the greatest capacity to see sort of beyond themselves and their own needs. Like in that moment when she kind of turns toward Hamilton in the space of grief and says, it's like, hey, I'll hold your hand. But I respect myself enough not to just forget everything that's happened and fall back into your arms.
That's right.
And then I'm going to lean into things that I'm passionate about. I'm not going to let my life be defined exclusively by the things that you're, that you're focused on and responsible for. So I think that is a, just a really refreshing, notion that we do get to see these, sort of secondary characters, secondary in the space of the musical, be the ones that are like reasonable, responsible, mature. Mm-hmm. And obviously like a movie or a musical about a mature person isn't going to be that interesting. It's going
to
generally
have to have the
like,
arc.
Yeah, look at all these people making great decisions, you know,
yeah,
doing the things that are best
boring.
For them. And instead what we see is like, you know, Burr and Hamilton and Jefferson and Madison and, you know, making all these, you know, terrible decisions driven by, really unchecked, insecurities and, lessons that they haven't effectively internalized. And I think that if there's a broader lesson of the musical, it's like, you know, there's this spectrum between, you know, Hamilton and Burr of, life philosophy of, Hamilton's not throwing away a shot. He's not wasting an opportunity. He's going to seize every moment. He's going to be relentless in his pace. He's not going to ever stop and take a break for anything. And there's some pretty devastating, social relational consequences to that. And with Burr, we don't really see a lot of his emotional, social, relationships. But we see is a lot of that internal angst and turmoil, which comes from a more, you know, reserved, like, I'm just going to wait and see how things unfold. But I think what we see in both of that is no matter where you find yourself along that spectrum, you've got to be willing to take a look inside and say that that to grow, I need to be able to recognize when that drive is hurting me and when it is helping me. You know, because again, we see successful people in the space of this movie. Like again, George Washington had a more like, you know, he had a more measured approach to the Revolutionary War, you know, whereas Hamilton wants to get out there. He wants to find it, you know, and, there's a song where they go, you know, outlast, I forget the other words there, but like, you know, Washington is somebody who is kind of taking both of those approaches, but it seems to have come from like a hard won maturity. And Washington is a veteran of the French Indian War and like has had his share of failures, you know, has engaged in a way that has allowed him to sort of internalize those lessons. So that's just me pontificating. I'm not sure how much real relevance there is there.
And I think you're getting at what is so cool with theater and the arts in general of the depictions of human stories teach us and help us. Mm-hmm. And we find ourselves in the story. And that arc of maturity, we're all on that same journey and path. And so I think that's why, you know, theater, the arts, music. It gives us this lens into the human spirit, which then lets us look at ourselves. And, you know, and it's, I think that many of us, as we watch a story or a movie, we find each character inside ourselves a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I get where Hamilton's coming on that because I have that too. I get where Burr's coming on that because I have that too. I can feel what Eliza's feeling right now because I've tasted that human experience too. And so we're all on this arc toward maturity. And I think that musicals like this inspire us, and history, like Hamilton's story, give us a little bit of a, you know, a guide, mm-hmm. a little bit of a flashlight through the life journey of somebody else, which helps us see a way.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched it like thinking at the end of my life, I love what Eliza has done. I want to be like that. And so watching her, you know, I found a lot of inspiration for my own future, right? I'm not there yet, but that gives me a picture of what it could look like.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, these stories that play out on the human condition are our stories as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Hamilton dies after getting shot mm-hmm. with a gun. We actually talked about that at one point, this idea of throwing away your shot versus and kind of what that signaling looked like. But, you know, I think if we maybe we could both share kind of like our broader takeaways and lessons in which you've talked about a little bit. But I think for me, in watching that, I'm thinking, you know, we exist inside of a swirling universe. I think there's actually a song called Hurricane in the
music. Yes, there is.
Now, there's a lot of songs in this musical.
It's such great music.
But, you know, there are so many things that contribute to the way that our life unfolds. You know, and if we say, you know, there's the old cliche of if any one of them had happened differently, you know, what mm-hmm. kind of world we'd be living in. Mm-hmm. But I think that we owe it to ourselves to be really curious about not only what's unfolding around us, but also what's unfolding inside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if at any point, if any point, like Hamilton had done some like mindfulness meditation where he said like, what's this feeling in me that,
exactly.
that would rather stay here and work than go and be with my family?
Right.
And how much is that serving me? Like the whole course of history might've been different.
Right.
You know, and the same thing with Burr, like, you know, hey, why do I feel this obligation to uphold my family legacy at the expense of my own happiness or to the detriment of my capacity to pursue things?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that it, when we fail to be curious, not just about ourselves, but what's unfolding around us, I think that that is when we are not as attuned to what it means to be fully authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, I don't have any reason to think that Hamilton wasn't authentically interested in being Eliza's husband.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that he never stopped to consider how any of those other things mm-hmm. that he felt driven toward, perhaps uncritically, disrupted his ability to be an effective husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the exercises that I'll do with people that are in recovery is, you know, make a list of the things that are most important to you, the top five things most important to you. And, you know, heroin is never in their top five. Alcohol is never in their top five. And yet alcohol can disrupt all five of those things,
exactly.
You know, so it can disrupt their career, their family, their, you know, their relationship with their partners, their, you know, basket weaving hobby. Alcohol can disrupt all of them. And I think that that's what, for Hamilton, it was his career mm-hmm. disrupted his, you know, his connection with his wife, his connection with his son, his connection with even his loftier goals
mm-hmm.
of kind of the legacy that he wants to leave and who he wants to be in the world. So yeah, I think that like, if I was going to draw a lesson from that, is like, man, like I hope I never become so blinded by, you know, one particular dimension of who I am, that I fail to really perceive what it means for me to be authentic, and ask hard questions about whether what I'm doing is serving my authenticity or not.
That's great. I think the things that really stand out impacting me are the sense of making a contribution and this feeling of we were running out of time. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I was inspired by Hamilton's drive and commitment in the in those early days. So I honor that. And then what you are speaking to is the shadow side of that, of mm-hmm. it can take us down. But this idea of, you know, what am I contributing with my life? And then the theme of contentment is so such a thread throughout it too, of, you know, and there's the song, "You're Never Satisfied." And that's what Angelica and Hamilton kind of sing to each other. And then we see it reprises throughout of the theme that Hamilton's never satisfied. It's mm-hmm. never enough. And I think that has helped me to ponder what is enough. And when are we satisfied, or do some of us have a drive that's never satisfied? And that's where the introspection comes to, you know, is my seeking more hurting somebody else? And then this theme of redemption of ourselves, I think. And like, I really see it in Eliza, of all these horrible things happen. And instead of feeling victim to it, she really channels that pain and grief and experience into what contribution can I make now? Mm-hmm. And I will continue what he started. And I think that that's, you know, that's the inner strength that we can have to redeem ourselves, I really see in the play. And then, you know, what's our story going to be? Who mm-hmm. lives, who dies, who tells my story?
Yeah.
You know, there's always this, what's our legacy? What do we leave behind? And what is our story? And Gary Zukav calls this earth school. You know, your soul is in earth school while you're on the earth. And, you know, what am I learning? What am I contributing? What am I leaving behind?
Yeah.
And I think Hamilton, big picture, Hamilton, the musical, big picture, really brings that to my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And how little of that legacy we can fully like see or appreciate, like in our lifetime. And, you know, for most of us, you know, I grew up, I think if you say, what is everything you know about Alexander Hamilton? I was like, I think he had something to do with a bank.
He's
on
the
$10 bill.
Yeah. That's all I know.
And, you know, but that ultimately, like, we live with the vestiges of the legacy that we pay attention to or we don't pay attention
to.
And so even though that, you know, and I think about, you know, again, going back to this idea of a multi-generational genogram, you know, I am who I am in part because of who my grandparents
Absolutely.
Were. How much of that I recognize and how much of that influences my daily behavior is really up to me.
Absolutely.
And I have to be able to be willing to pay attention to that and how those dynamics are at play in my life today.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing is true for how we live our lives, but also, you know, how Alexander Hamilton lived his life and all that. So I think that wraps us up for our 2-part deep dive into the relationships of Hamilton, the musical. You can watch it on Disney Plus. That's not, I guess that's a plug. I don't know. You know, or watch it with somebody else who has Disney Plus,
right.
As long as you're, you know, 6 feet apart and wearing a mask. Yeah, if you want to find out more information about my practice, you can go to talkingwithjames.com.
And you can find me at compassionfix.com.
That will do it for us today. We will be back next week. Like the show, rate it, review it, share it with a friend. It helps people get connected with us. And until next time,
be well.